So we're holding on your chest on the bays, 9 lines from the top. 1 in Bishar. Okay. We discussed yesterday as follows. We were starting to talk about the concept of Hagrama, one of the 5 major things that happens with Shchita, is if the Shchita is done in the wrong part of the neck, too high or too low. So we said that there's actually on Testament Aleph explains that the word Hagrama is related to a word that means to weigh down one side of a balance scale. Gerumin, like when you're weighing out quantity, something that you're selling, merchandise, so you're selling to somebody, you have to give them a little bit extra. It's called gerumin. We learned that concept in Bava Metzia. It's kind of Bava Metzia, actually. It was Bava Metzia, not Bava Metzia, yeah. We had the word gerumim over there. So it actually explains the word hagrama is related to that. So therefore, like, you're weighing it towards one side. Instead of doing a straight shita, you're doing, okay. Anyway, so we discussed this following. You have at the top of the windpipe, so you have as follows. Again, you said the windpipe has, what? You have it up there. Yeah, see. So the windpipe has a bunch of rings of cartilage that surround it. Most of them are only partial rings, the U-shaped, the horseshoe-shaped, or whatever. And then you have the top ring, which is called the Habat HaGadol, the big ring that surrounds it completely. Call it whatever you want. It's the top ring-shaped thing. The thyroid cartilage is not ring-shaped. It's shaped more like a hat. And in fact, for that reason, it's called, in our Gemara, and in the first one, it's called Koiva. That may be, but in total shape, it looks more like a helmet or a hat, and therefore it's called koiva. So again, you have the partial rings, you have the tabas and gola, the cricoid cartilage surrounds the windpipe completely, and then you have above that you have the koiva, the thyroid cartilage, which looks like a helmet or a hat. Okay, so we were saying that. In our Mishnah, we had said that if a person checks through the tabat, in tabat agola, as long as he leaves the ring of it intact above the shchita knife, in other words, so he divides it into 2 sections, and each section constitutes a complete ring, then the shchita is kosher, but it's not, then not. And we said, Rabbi Yosef Ben Yehuda said it doesn't matter even if it's not a complete ring, even if all he left above the knife, closer to the head side, is just a piece of the Tabat HaGdola that goes around most of it, then that's good enough. So that led us into a discussion. We said that Rav and Shmuel said the halacha is like a Yosef Ben Yehuda, but only as regards to Tabat HaGdola. And then we mentioned the Braita that stands on that, and also, that it will be Kekula. In other words, they have to have most of it. And then we mentioned, and the Braita also, we mentioned the opinion of Chamina ben Antignus, who says that there is something that would be considered mogremis according to the previous opinion, which he would say is kosher, which we're going to expand on that in the Gemara later. So we ended up saying that Rav, what it is Rav and Shmuel partially agree with Rav, with Rav Yossi, Rav Yehuda, and partially disagree with him. They agree with him as far as the Tabat HaGdola, that will be Kekula, as long as you cut through it, even if you didn't leave a complete ring of it, unlike the Tanakama of our Mishnah, you only left the majority of a ring, then you're okay. They disagreed with him about the other Tabois, namely, either they said you can't shech through the other Tabois at all, which is Rashi's explanation of Rabbi Yehuda, you can only shech between them, or point to Tosafot, because the Tabois themselves are not in and of themselves part of the Kana. They surround the Kana, they're not the Kana itself. So he would hold, therefore, that you can't. They may be important because they help hold it open, but they themselves are not the Kana. The Kana itself is the membrane and the muscles and whatever through which the air passes. The cartilage is just there to stick in it, to support it. Okay, so anyway, so that's Rashi's explanation of Rabbi Yosef Yehuda. And Choice's explanation is there's no problem cutting through the rings, but Rabbi Yosef Yehuda would say with all of them, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda would say Rubik Kekulo, and Rav and Shmuel disagree with him in that, and they would say with the other rings you need to cut through all of them, meaning you need to cut through the whole Kana, because after all they don't surround the whole Kana. Okay, so the bottom line is though that we see that Rav and Shmuel basically agree with Rabbi Yosef Yehuda as far as the upper border, how far towards the head can you shech. Namely, you have to, the furthest towards the head that you can shech is within the tabach agdola, within the cricoid cartilage, all it is unlike the kind of karma of the Mishnah, who said that you have to leave a complete ring of it intact. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says it's good enough if you only left most of the ring intact. Okay. So he said, Rav and Shmuel agree with him on that. But, wait. Rav and Shmuel agree with him on that point. But, okay. So he saw it Rav Zera, the Gemara says, the Gemara tells, when Rav Zera came up from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, Ochom Mugremis, the Rav and Shmuel, he ate meat from an animal which was shechted, and where the shchita was done with Hagrama, according to Rav and Shmuel's definition. In other words, that the shchita was done in the Tabach HaGdola, through the cricoid cartilage, and not a complete ring of it was left, according to the Yeshiva of Yehuda, we're saying, even if not a complete ring is left, then it's okay. But in other words, the point is, even according to him, you can't shecht above the Tabach HaGdola. Above the cricoid cartilage would be possible. However, that's Rav and Shmuel say that. In other words, in the Koyva. According to that way of looking at it, according to the Yeshiva of Yehuda's way of looking at it, if you were to shech in the koivat, in the thyroid cartilage, then it would be possible. But Rav Zera, when he came to Eretz Yisrael, he ate meat from an animal that had been shechted where the shechita went through the koivat. Now, not Zera, it just means he didn't hold like Rav and Shmuel. So therefore, so the question is, how could he do that? I'm relayed, so they said to Rav Zera, Lav me after the Rav and Shmuel, aren't you from Babel, where Rav and Shmuel are from? How do you go against them? Hold on, he's not in Babel. He's in Eretz Yisrael. Wait. Okay, first of all, he's in Eretz Yisrael. He's not following Rav and Shmuel. They're asking him, why not? You come from where Rav and Shmuel are. Shouldn't you have to follow that question? So he answers them, I disagree with the whole premise that Rav and Shmuel even said this did. He says, Man Omra. After all, he says, who is it that said that Rav and Shmuel hold this way? Who is it that reported that Rav and Shmuel hold this way? Yosef Achia. You know what? You know who it was? It was Yosef Achia. That is the famous Amora of Yosef from throughout Shaki. Well, Rav Zera didn't hold of Rav Yosef's ability to be able to give over teachings of Amoraim accurately. He said, Yosef Achia Mikola Al Magom. He learns from everybody, like indiscriminately, and therefore not necessarily. So not necessarily did he? He was also an Amora, of course. Rav Zera is also an Amora, but he's saying you should know. I don't hold that Rav Yosef is accurately recording things. He learned from everybody. So maybe what it is he learned from somebody else. Right? He learned from somebody else, and mistakenly he attributed it to Rav and Shmuel. So I'm not obligated to follow that version of things. Shomer of Yosef is that. Well, Rav Yosef heard that Rav Zera said this, and he was upset. Omar, he says, what do you mean? I know Mekua, Omar Zemirna. What does Rav Zera think? I learn indiscriminately from everybody, and I don't know how to tell who said what? No, I know Rav Yehuda Zemirna. Specifically, I learned by Rav Yehuda. And Rav Yehuda was so accurate that he was... Okay, maybe it was, I don't know, but no, well, Rav Zera is saying, why should I have to follow the halacha? I don't hold that Rav Zera, that Rav Yosef. Okay, well, that's he's saying, therefore I don't have to follow his opinion in halacha. Okay, he would have to give a reason why. You're telling me Rav and Shmuel said this, I don't believe that Rav and Shmuel actually said this. So Rav Yosef is upset about it. He says, I'm not Mekula Alma Gemirna. You're telling me Rav Zera, you're claiming that I learned from everybody indiscriminately? No, I'm not Rav Yehuda Kamina. I specifically learned by Rav Yehuda. That's the stated to Gavra Goris, and Rav Yehuda is so accurate in giving over who he learned from that even when he has a topic who he learned it from, then he explicitly says that. He'll clarify, he'll say, this particular thing, I'm not sure if I heard from one or from the other. You find that everything else he says, Rav Yehuda had learned by Rav and he had learned by Shmuel. So sometimes there would be something that he was doubtful of which one he had heard from. But ordinarily, when he says something in the name of Rav, Rav Yosef is saying, you can take it to the bank that it really comes from Rav. And the same thing when he says it from Shmuel. So yes, I do report things accurately. Where do we see that Rav Yehuda does that? The Amr of Yehuda, Amr of Yirmi of Ahava, Sophic Mishmei de Rav, Sophic Mishmei de Shmuel, and here's the key thing, that he says, I heard it from Rav Yirmi of Ahava, but Rav Yirmi of Ahava himself was unsure whether he heard this particular din that we're going to say now from Rav or from Shmuel. And the din is Shloshim Asirnas Abachar, Ramakam Shein Mumcha. When you have an animal of a fur, and you can't shecht it, and the Kohen can't eat it until it develops a mum, because you don't have a bit of mitzvah to bring it to the Kohen, So normally you need a person who's a mumcha, who has expertise, who has smicha, first of all, who has smicha ishmikiyish, and second, and who has specifically who has the expertise and who has smicha to be able to be master mumibachar. If you don't have such a person, then you can have shloish makirinas a bachar. Then you can have three regular people to be master a bachar. However, in that case, the difference is then it needs to be a very, very obvious mum. If it's a kind of subtle mum that you need a mumcha for, then that won't work. So, for example, we talked about yesterday, let's say a notch in the ear of a bechor, that wouldn't necessarily be the kind of big, obvious mum that shlosh, that three regular people could be master. For that, you need a mumcha. But when it has to be a really clear-cut thing, and then when you don't have a mumcha, then you can have three people. Okay, so the point is, Rabbi Yosef is saying, you see that Rabbi Yehuda is very accurate in reporting who he heard things from, and I learned by Rabbi Yehuda, so therefore, don't say that I've just learned indiscriminately from everybody and I may not be the truth. Okay. Fine. So the question is, fine, even if Rav Zera does not accept that Rav and Shmuel actually said this din, the fact of the matter is, the minhag in Babel was to follow this thing that was reported in the name of Rav and Shmuel, to not shech anywhere above the Tabas HaGol. So therefore, the question is, Rav Zera lesley noisin olav chumra amokam shiyotin isham v'chumra amokam shaholach lasham, doesn't Rav Zera hold of the concept that which is, they say, this is brought in a mission in Stockton, that when a person travels from one place to another, he has to follow the chumras of the place that he came from and the place that he traveled to. So therefore, he should have to follow the chumras of Babel, where he came from. If they don't eat from animals that are shechted above the Tabas HaGadol, even if you're not sure, he should still have to keep that. But Rabbi says, the difference is, Hani Mili mit Babel, le Babel, ume Eretz Yisrael, le Eretz Yisrael. That would only apply when a person is traveling within different places in Babel, different places in Babel may also have different minhagim, or from one place to another in Eretz Yisrael. Inami me Eretz Yisrael in Babel, or if a person leaves Eretz Yisrael and goes to Babel, then he has to follow both sets of minhagim. Avol mi Babel la Eretz Yisrael, but says Abaya, when a person goes from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, then the minhagim of Eretz Yisrael takes precedence. Given the Anan Kaisinim Rahu, because we, the Bnei Babel, are subject to the Bnei Eretz Yisrael, in the sense that Rashi says, first of all, as far as Kiddush HaChodesh and Ibra Shaka. Hold on, we'll talk about what happened today in a second. But Abaya is saying, we depend on the Bnei Eretz Yisrael for a few things. First of all, as far as Kiddush HaChodesh and Ibra Shaka, those things can only be done in Eretz Yisrael, so we, Bnei Babel, have to follow them. Also, Rashi says, another thing is also, there's no smicha in Babel, so when there's zinei knosis that have to be judged, anything involving a knas, then that also can only be judged, that also can only be handled in Eretz Yisrael. There's no such thing as smicha in Babel, period. So for regular zinei mamonis, you don't need smicha, ish and ish. But for zinei knosis, you need smicha. That is why nowadays we don't do zinei knosis, because nobody has that smicha, ish and ish. Anything. Any knas, the definition of knas is you're paying something other than the amount of damage. You're paying extra, you're paying a fixed amount. Yes. All of those things are considered knas, yes. So the Shloshim Shalevit is one example. Kefo was an example. We have that concept in Sanhedrin and other places, yes. So therefore, in all those things, therefore, we, Bnei Babel, are not able to do these things on our own. We can't be Mechadish Chadashim on our own. We can't be Ma'avar Shonim on our own. We can't do Dinei Knosis. Therefore, Amaya is saying, therefore, when a person goes from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, therefore, Avdin and Kavasayu, Anan, Katsin and Lahu, since we're subject to them, Avdin and Kavasayu, then when we travel from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, we don't have to show any covered to the place we came from and continue to observe its minhagim, we're allowed to discard those minhagim and just take on the minhagim of Eretz Yisrael. And that's what Rav Zera is doing because he went from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. So therefore, yeah. Tosfos points out, actually, the Gemara does say in Sanhedrin that there was one advantage that the Bnei Babel had. They had greater temporal power because the Reish Galusa had power given to him by the government, and therefore the Dayanim over there were actually able to enforce their judgments much more than they were in Eretz Yisrael. But as far as the actual deciding the din, that they had primacy in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Yeah, well, that's considered what?
Well, first of all, no, actually, Eric Stillman is still above all as far as Yorkton. Fine, that's as far as Yorkton. That's neither here nor there. Yeah, that's the point. Bubba has a better Yorkton than Eric Stillman. Fine, but that's neither here nor there as far as traveling from one place to another. Okay, Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi says you don't need that, sir. Afilu tema mebubble out Israel. Even you could argue when a person travels from bubble to Israel, normally he should have to keep them and hug him a bubble as well, you could argue.
In
out Israel. However, Hani Mili, Hecha the Daija Lachter. However, that would only apply if he eventually plans to return. That would only apply if he eventually plans to return. Yes. Rav Zera ain't died to last her, however. Rav Zera had no plans to return. And you know the famous thing that Rav Zera fasted many fasts in order to forget the way of learning about Israel, so obviously. So obviously he wasn't planning to return to Babel. So that's a special case, therefore he doesn't have to keep them and hug him a Babel. But if he had been planning to return, Rav Ashi is saying he still would have had to keep those men hugging. But yes, that is relevant nowadays as far as the question when a person travels from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz or vice versa. Do they keep one day of Yom Tov or 2 days? Do they keep according to where they are now or where they come from?
He said that from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, you have to keep Eretz Yisrael.
That was according to Rabbi. Rav Ashi is saying the difference is not which one is greater. Are you planning to return or not? If you're planning to return, you have to keep them both regardless. Even though Babel is subject to Eretz Yisrael, nevertheless, though, you would still have to keep both. But only if he's planning to return. Rav Zera is not planning to return, so therefore it wouldn't matter. Yeah, so there is. The post can talk about how long are you planning to return, whatever. The point is, Rav Zera was planning. It was a one way thing. He had gotten a one way ticket. He's never planning to return. Okay. Fine. Okay, so that explains why Rav Zera is not obligated to keep them in Hagim about Yisrael. Okay. Amalei Abaya Lo Rav Yosef. Okay, but now Abaya after Rav Yosef, further on this detail about this that Rav and Shmuel are saying you can't shecht above the Tabata Gerla, the highest you can shecht is within it, and leave at least part of it above the Shechita knife, the majority of it, the majority of a ring, the majority of the circumference, and Rav Zera is saying, I don't hold to that. The question is, don't the Chachamim who came from the city of Mechuza, which is in Babel, they say, they say that Rav Zera actually said in the name of Rav Nachman that what Rav and Shmuel would consider Mugremus, we say is kosher. So what do you mean? We in Babel hold that the thing is kosher. Meaning like what Rav Zera is doing in Eretz Yisrael. But the question is, how are they in Mechuza itself, which is part of Babel, how are they saying that the thing is Mutter? We just said that in Babel, we're knowing an issue in it, or like Rav and Shmuel. Omalei, so Rabbi Yosef answers him, as the expression goes, Nara Nara Ukashve. Every river spreads in the place where it's used to going. In other words, later on in the Sefer, you have that expression again. Rashi explains it a little bit differently. Each river has its own kind of current. The point is, in different places, different minhagim. In some places in Babel, they follow Rav and Shmuel, and therefore they would hold that Shechita above the Tabat HaGolah is Babel. In other places, in Babel, just in Mechuza, they don't hold like that, and they're entitled to follow their minhag, which is that you're allowed to Shechita above the Tabat HaGolah. Most people in Babel apparently follow Rav and Shmuel, but in Mechuza, they had a different minhag. Fine, so the same way as in other countries, you have at different times in Jewish history. You have the majority of people in a certain country had a certain minhag, but then you had individual cities within that country that had minhagim of their own. So fine, they're allowed to follow their own minhagim. Okay, talking further about this business of how high you can shech. So now, we said as follows. So far we said that we had the Tanakhama of the Mishnah and Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda had both said that if the highest you can shecht is within the Tabata Gola, within the cricoid cartilage. The only difference was that the Tanakhama had said you have to leave a complete ring of it intact above the Shechita knife. And Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda said as long as you have the majority of the circumference, then you're good. But then we mentioned that Rav Chanina ben Antignus held that Mugremet is kosher. In other words, something that both the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda would hold, and Rav and Shmuel, we said, would hold as Mugremet, he holds as kosher. And we just said, Rav Zera followed that when he was in Eretz Yisrael, and the people of Mechuza followed that in Babel.
So now, Tanakhama and Yosi Rabbi Yehuda
is the majority versus the whole thing. Well, obviously we're talking only B'diyeh, but clearly you should check lower down, sure. But in other words, right. So, but we said there's a third. So far we said there's a third opinion. Hello, namely Rabbi Yossi, namely Rabbi Chanina ben Antipas, who says that what the previous two opinions would define as mugremet, he would define as kosher. So now we have to figure out what is. So now that means, in other words, that implies that he's shechting within the koiva, within the thyroid cartilage. So the question is, how high can you go with that? So far, the understanding has been...
Chanina ben Antipas,
right. He says that you're able to shech someplace within the koiva. So up until now, we've been assuming, Rashi mentioned earlier, that Reb Chanina ben Antipas, and also Reb Zera, and also the Bnei Mechuza, would say the highest you can go is only up until the shipui koiva. Shipui means the strength. If you look at the shape of the koiva, the shape of the thyroid cartilage, it starts by widening until it reaches this point over here, which is the Adam's apple. Then it starts narrowing up from there. That part where it starts narrowing is called shipui koiva.
Shipui means shipua, meloshin strength.
So therefore, the idea would be that Chanina ben Antipas and the other opinions that we were just mentioning would be saying the highest shech is the shipui koiva. However, now we're going to have another opinion. Rav Shimon ben Lakish achshu b'chuder dekoiva. Rav Shimon ben Lakish, Resh Lakish, held that the shechita is kosher even all the way at the top of the koiva. So in other words, again, according to what we've just been saying, so far we've been saying that the highest anybody says you can shech is this point, the Adam's apple. Now Rav Resh Lakish is coming and saying you can shech all the way up till here. Not above the cover, but towards the top of the cover, at the very top of it. Korya, lay Rav Yechanan, so Rav Yechanan said on that, he used the expression on that, gisa, gisa. So Rashi explains, gisa means meloshin gas, like you're going too far. You're being matir too much. You're pushing it, basically, yeah, we were saying it. There's some of the Rishonim also talk about, I think the Ritva and others talk about, that the word gis also means a brother-in-law. So therefore, like he's using the word gisa in a double sense. Gisa, brother-in-law, because the Shlokish was Rabbi Yechanan's brother-in-law. Gisa, you're going too far in being master. Okay. Amar Papi Mishmei de Rabba. So now another din in this connection. Rav Papi says in the name of Rabba. Poga b'chiti trefa. If he's poga, and we're going to define in a second what the word poga means in this connection. But if he's poga in the chiti, then it's kosher. Now what are the chiti? So you have like this. On the outside of the, you actually have two different understandings among the Rishonim, what the chiti are. So what it is like this. On the outside of the toiva, on the outside of the thyroid cartilage, you have two other pieces of cartilage that stick out on the outside of it. And in medicalese, they're called the corniculate cartilage. Yeah. One opinion of Rishonim is that is the chiti. The other opinion is, if you look inside the thyroid cartilage at that same point, you will find the vocal cords.
Nice.
You'll find the muscles over there that contract and expand when a person is speaking or when an animal makes noise.
That attach themselves to these bones.
Right. So you have, well, not bones per se, but cartilage, whatever. You have two different understandings that are showing what the chiti are in this connection. Does it mean the cartilage on the outside, or does it mean the vocal cords on the inside? Okay, anyway, so Rav Papi is saying in the name of Rabba, poga b'chiti trefa. If you are poga in the chiti,
which is like chuka,
well, either it would be meloshin chita, meloshin wheat, because they look like grains of wheat, and that's why in English they're called the corniculate cartilage. Corniculate means horn-shaped, because they're shaped a little bit like horns. Or it means the vocal cords, because like the space between them has the shape sort of a grain of wheat. Whatever it is, anyway. So if you poga in them, then the animal is trefa. So we have to figure out. So the Chachmei Yeshiva were wondering, what does the word poga mean in this connection? Does it mean poga v'noga b'hen? Does it mean poga in the sense that he actually touched them with the shchita knife? You have the machlokas we're showing him whether chiti means the cartilage, whether it means the cartilage or whether it means the vocal cord. But whatever it is, first we have to figure out what the word poga means. The thing is, the word poga, as the Gemara is going to point out, can have two different meanings. Is it poga v'noga b'hen? Does the word poga over here mean that he actually touched them, that he actually cut through them? Which in that case, the word poga can mean to cut. Because you have a number of times towards the beginning of Malachim, you have various people that Shlomo had executed, and by each one of them, the expression is vayifka bo vayomos, that he poga in him and killed him. So there it doesn't just mean he encountered him. There it means he actually stabbed him or cut it or whatever, somehow killed him. So therefore, poga over here maybe means that. Or maybe the word poga means he didn't actually touch them, he just cut very, very close to them. And that could be, by Yifgu or by Malach Elikim. As you have, by Yasser, it says that Malach Elikim encountered him, met him. There doesn't mean they banged into him or they harmed him or whatever. That means they encountered him, they came close. So that's
the
No. We're not talking about the Malach. That's not the Malach that he fought against. The Malachim that he met when he left Lavan, he's on his way back to Israel. By Yifgu by Malach Elikim. The end of Parashat Vayetze. So there, they didn't touch him. They didn't harm him. They came close. So what does the word poga mean in our thing of it? By the way, when you have the popular expression, sometimes the people say lo noga v'lo poga. It comes from this Gemara over here. Yeah. Okay. So it means lo noga v'lo poga means like it didn't even come close. But it didn't come close to happening yet. Ismar, so it seems that the Gemara leaves the question unresolved, what poga means in this connection, but you have different gersos of Rishonim over here, that the next discussion over here, of the next statement of Rapapa bears on this, but also you have, on top of this, also you have Rashi and Tosfos argue, according to the opinion that it means poga v'lenoga, what are we talking about? According to Rashi, it would mean that if he cut directly below them, then already it would be possible. So you have to cut someplace somewhat more below them, if we say poga below
noga. If he cuts above them,
If we say poga noga, then the only thing that would make it possible is cutting through them. Okay. Cutting close to them would still be cautious. If we say poga below noga, then it would mean even cutting directly below them would already be possible. You would have to cut a little bit below that. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos discusses that no, poga below noga may mean actually that it's kosher, even that poga below noga might mean that it's kosher even if you shechted slightly above them. Okay.
How can that mean poga below
noga? Well, that would be poga below noga. Poga, you came very close to them below noga, but you didn't actually touch them. You didn't cut through them. Okay. Okay, that's our choice for 6 points. Okay, Ismar, so now we have a further discussion about that. I'm going to pop a Meshmeh Rava. Shir b'chiti k'sheva. If you left over some of the chiti and you didn't cut them, which is the equivalent of poga v'naga, you actually cut through the chiti, again, whether it means the cartilage or whether it means the vocal cords, as the case may be, you actually cut through them, but you left some of them intact on the side towards the head. So you cut through them, but you have a complete piece of them that's on the head side, Shera. Then
this is much higher up than we were yesterday.
Well, so yesterday we were talking about shechting within the Tabasa Gola. Right. This is somewhat higher than that, but not a lot higher. Especially the Gemara is going to point out in a second that the Shifui Koba, the place where it starts narrowing, where it starts sloping up, is the same as where the Chiti are. On the inside there is where you have the vocal cords, and on the outside there is where you have the cartilage. So yeah. Okay. Bashir b'chitik sheira, Amr of Amem of Bamayinuka, have a ke'imna kamed Rav Chiya b'reid Rav Yivya. I was standing as a Talmud in front of Rav Chiya b'reid Rav Yivya, v'omerli, and he told me the same thing. Shir b'chitik sheira. Even if you shechted cutting through the chiti, as long as you let some of them intact above the shechita knife, then you're okay. There's a shechita is kosher. Amr Ravina v'ravashi, and Ravina says in the name of Ravashi, also, Amali Rav Shomin Misuvra, Rav Shomin from Suvra, which is the name of the player, which is the name of a place, also said, Ikla Mazutra Lashin, Mazutra one time visited our town, the Dorash and Idarshin, the same thing. Shir b'chiti k'sheira, that as long as you left some of the chiti intact above the shechita knife, then it's kosher, yeah, whatever the definition of chiti is. Mabravashi, I'm a poga b'chiti k'sheira, Mabravashi says no. If you came close to the chiti, then it's still kosher, because you didn't actually cut through them. It can't be helped. Shir b'chiti treifa, but if you actually cut through them and only left some of them intact, then Ma'abra Rav Ashi says it would be treifa, unlike the opinions that we just said. The hilchata, the bottom line halacha, mishipui koiva ulamata treira, any place you shecht on the windpipe from the shipui koiva downwards, 1 second, from the Shikri Kova downward, from where it starts slanting and downward, in other words, from the Adam's apple and downward along the neck, is Shera, Vahainu, the Shire of the Chitti, and that is the equivalent of leaving over the Chitti. In other words, not like Margaret Abashi, who would say that that's possible. The halacha is, like what we said, what Rapapa brought in the name of Rava, and what Rav Chiya Brezer of Ibya said, and what Marzutra Darshan in Sibra over there, the halacha is like all of them, as long as Chiya Bechiti that is kosher. And how would you know that you've been Chiya Bechiti if you go from the Shipuri Koiva and downward? If you go anywhere from the protrusion over there, from the Adam's apple downward, then you know you're good, then you know there's Chiti left, and you're okay.
1 second. If you go below the Shipuri, if you go below the Shipui, but instead of going horizontally, you go up, the notch is slanted towards the upside.
The definition of going from the Shipui Koiva and downward would be that you've left over the Chiti, because the Chiti actually stick up. They go from the bottom of the Koiva, and they extend upward past the Shipui. They extend upward past the Adam's apple.
Right.
So therefore, as long as you're cutting from the Shikri Koiva and downward, then you've definitely left over some of the Chiti. And therefore, you're good.
Okay.
This is towards the top, right?
You have a lot
of different opinions of posting about different details of this and how exactly high you can check. But this is the basic concept. I mean, if you want to know more, then we can look in Shulchan Aruch and see the exact details.
Okay.
Okay, continues the Gemara. Rav Nachman Achshon Shikri Koiva Ulamata. Rav Nachman also said that it's kosher as long as you shecht it someplace below the Shikri Koiva, someplace below where it starts sloping upwards. Amalei Rav Chanan Bakhtinah Rav Nachman. Kiman. Okay,